So I'm going to start with a poem by a woman called Portia Nelson. I expect some of you will know it. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes me a long time to get out. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk round it. I walk down another street. So do any of you recognise that process? Yeah? So this is the process of awareness being revolutionary. So it's a process of coming into awareness, opening our eyes to ourselves and our habits, taking responsibility for our experience, and then making a choice about how we want to be in the world. So this is the basic process of the Dharma. It is the Dharma revolution. It is why awareness is revolutionary. Because awareness gives us the choice, yeah? When we are aware of ourselves and our habits, we have a choice about how we want to be in the world. When we're not aware, we have no choice. So this is the revolution. And it is a transformational, it is a transforming revolution. It is transformational. It has transformed me, so I can say that through personal experience. Yeah. So I've been practicing this revolution for over 10 years now, and it has transformed me. It's transformed me from a very underconfident, neurotic, approval-seeking teenager or young woman to a lion-minded individual, yeah, or aspiring individual. Anyway, I have my moments where I'm still a mess, of course, but I can work more creatively with that. It's transformed me from someone who experienced a lot of suffering in the world to someone who's freer of suffering, who's more positive and creative. And that's been for my own benefit, but it's also been for the benefit of others and the benefit of the world. So this revolution of transforming yourself also is for the benefit of others, yeah? So this is the journey of the spiritual life, and that's called many things, yeah? So awakening, freedom, enlightenment, seeing things as they really are, becoming truly human, becoming a true individual. So you might find you relate more to one of those terms than others in terms of the goal, if you think of those terms, of the spiritual life and the journey. And this faculty of awareness is absolutely crucial on that journey. So, yeah, in a way, it's absolutely crucial on that journey. And it's found over and over and over again in the Buddha's teachings. So those of you that are familiar with the Buddha's teachings will know there's a lot of lists out there, aren't there? Yeah, so you might know your Buddhist lists. And the awareness crops up in a lot of those lists. You know, it's one of the five spiritual faculties. It's a segment on the Eightfold Path. It's one of the seven factors of awakening. It's absolutely crucial, this faculty of awareness. And the Buddha taught over and over again the importance of awareness. In fact, in a sutta called the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha taught awareness as a direct path to realization, to freedom. The Buddha said, Awareness, this is the direct path for purifications of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of nirvana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. Yeah. So that's what we're looking at this weekend. We're looking at the four foundations of mindfulness, of awareness, of this revolutionary process of deepening awareness of ourselves and how that transforms ourselves and others. So these four foundations of awareness, of mindfulness that we're developing, is mindfulness of our bodies, so the our physical form. Mindfulness of our feelings, so in Buddhism that's very simple, feelings refer to very simply the kind of tone of the experience, whether it's pleasant, whether it's unpleasant, whether it's neutral. Emotions develop out of those feelings, but when we talk about feelings, we're talking just primarily about the tone of whether it's something's pleasant or unpleasant. Then we're developing awareness of our thoughts, the mental states we're in, whether we're angry or full of faith or whatever mental state we're in. What our views are, what our opinions are, what our ideas are. And then we're developing awareness of how all of that, we experience all of that in terms of reality. So we see our thoughts and our feelings and our body in terms of the Buddha's teachings. So that might just be noticing impermanence, say. So the Buddha teaches that all things are impermanent. So in contemplating this, that foundation of mindfulness would be just looking at the body or looking at the feelings, looking at your thoughts, noticing how they change. Yeah. So these are the four foundations, the foundations of body, of feelings, of thoughts, and of dharmas. Don't worry if you think, I'm not going to remember all of this. So we're going to draw this out in our experience over the weekend. So in a way, if you remember it from the talk, great. But hopefully you'll remember it when you locate it in your experience. Yeah. So we're all in this revolutionary process. That's what the Dharma Revolution is about, of developing an awareness of ourselves, of our bodies, of our feelings, of our thoughts, and taking responsibility for them, making a choice. Yeah, that's the crux of the Dharma Revolution. And in that revolution, mindfulness of our feelings is very much key. Yeah. So has anyone noticed if you're having a pleasant experience, what do you do? Yeah, you want more of it. Yeah. Yeah. And if you're having an unpleasant experience, what do you do? You want it to go away. Yeah, you push it away. And if it's your experience is kind of neutral, what happens? Not bothered. Yeah. So this is where mindfulness of feeling is very key to this revolution. So if we can develop awareness of our feelings, of when something's pleasant, how we hanker after it, how we want more of it. When something's unpleasant, how we can push it away, how we create stress and anxiety around that. Or when something's neutral, how we're just indifferent. So we try and develop this awareness of feeling. And in this awareness of feeling, we create a bit of a gap. That's where the choice comes in. Yeah. So if we can be aware of this is something that's unpleasant, I don't like it, I'm pushing it away, we have a choice. We have a choice about whether we keep pushing it away or whether we can open to that experience, maybe develop some acceptance around it or change it in a way. We have a level of choice around it. And this is very much what we're going to be exploring in this teaching tomorrow in the study, as well as in our personal experience in the morning. So I'll give you a bit of an excerpt from the Buddha's teaching on this, from this sutta. He says, when it's quite particular language. If you haven't read the Pali suttas before, you'll get a sense of that. Anyway, it says, when an untaught worldling, that's us, is touched by a painful bodily feeling, He worries and grieves. He laments, beats his breast, weeps, and is distraught. He thus experiences two kinds of feelings, a bodily and a mental feeling. It is as if a man were pierced by a dart, and following the first piercing, he is then hit by a second dart. So that person will experience feelings caused by two darts. It is similar with the untaught worldling. When he is touched by a painful bodily feeling, he worries and grieves, he laments, he beats his breast, he weeps and is distraught. So he experiences two kinds of feeling, a bodily and a mental feeling. So I'm just going to unpack that a bit in my own personal experience, and hopefully that will help you get the gist of it. So we're talking about these two darts, yeah? So you have a dart of unpleasant experience, and then based on that unpleasant experience, you have a second dart, which is all your thoughts and feelings in relation to that experience. I'm jumping around and not following my notes at all, which is always very confusing. So I'll give you a personal example, that's simpler. So with me, a very simple example of this would be around my own physical health. So I have a neuromuscular condition, which means that I sometimes lose my balance, or I might trip, and or I can feel quite uncoordinated, or my body can feel very fatigued at times. So in a way, that's the first dart. It's unpleasant. You know, if I'm feeling really tired in my body and my body's really aching, that is unpleasant. That's quite simple. There's not that much I can do about that. Yeah, you know, there isn't treatment or blah de blah. That's just how it is. Yeah. So to some extent, I just have to accept that is how I am. Then there's the second dart. So if I'm not mindful, what happens is I get pierced by the first dart, which is like, oh, this is unpleasant. I'm feeling really tired right now. And I've just tripped four times in the last 10 minutes. And that's feeling just quite painful. Right, so that's the first dart. Then the second dart is all the anxiety and the fear that comes along with that. So that might be, oh my God, what if this gets worse? What am I going to do? How am I going to be? Will people still love me? Will people think I'm incompetent? Blah, 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 blah. So it goes on. So in a way, that first dart of being tired, of tripping up, that is just how my body is. There really isn't much I can do about that. But all the other stuff, the anxiety that I bring to that, that's pretty optional. That is pretty optional. And when we are aware of ourselves, this is where the revolution happens. It happens between those two darts. So the first dart, that's how it is. There's not much I can do about that. The second dart is pretty optional. Yeah? It doesn't go away overnight. They're strong habits, you know. We develop these strong habits of anxiety. They're different for different people, yeah? We all have different habits. You might not be someone who gets very anxious about whether people love them. I have that. It's quite a strong thing for me, but that might not be relevant for you. You might... Your second dart might be feeling really angry about something, or angry with someone, or it might be quite different, yeah. But we all have these experiences, yeah, where something happens. There's things in our lives that are unpleasant that we can't do much about. They are just how they are. So for me, I'm talking about a physical condition because, in a way, it's quite simple to explore this example with a physical condition. But this is also true of unpleasant mental feeling. So, you know, you might have stress or you might have anxiety in your life or things that are emotionally difficult in your life, which are just the way they are at the moment. Yeah, for whatever reason, that is just the way it is. But there's all the stuff that we pile on top of that, which is optional to more or lesser an extent. And through awareness, we can start working out what's the bit that's there that we just have to learn to accept, and what's all the other stuff that we can learn to let go of and to reduce. So this is the revolution. And yeah, this is what the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago. I find that amazing. I find that really amazing that I read the Buddha's teachings now and I think, my God, that's 2,500 years old. And it's like, it's so true. It's just the human condition. And the human condition hasn't changed, you know. It's as relevant now as it was then. Yeah. I always find that amazing. So we're going to be exploring this together. Yeah, we're going to be exploring together tomorrow morning this kind of, in a way, well, what is our first art and what is our second art? And what is the revolution that can happen there for us? How can we be freer? How can we free ourselves? How can we, really free ourselves? How can we awaken from all that other stuff that we add on? So this is a revolution that we are attending to. So in a way, that might all feel a bit grim. You might think, oh God, I'm going to have to really turn towards all the difficult things in my life. And we will be doing that, yeah? And that is part of the spiritual journey. And it doesn't stop, although I think the first 5 years are really tough. And then gets a bit easier and there's occasional ups and downs, but anyway, not to inspire you that it does get easier. That was my experience anyway.
I didn't
know
it was mine.
Oh, okay. So maybe it just ebbs and flows, but it's different for different people. Anyway, but as well as turning towards what is difficult in our experience, which is a crucial step in on the spiritual journey, we also need to learn to let in the good, yeah? So we're also going to be turning towards the pleasant aspects of our experience because they exist as well, yeah? And I think this is really interesting because actually we're wired up to pay more attention to painful experience, yeah? So from a neuroscience point of view, we are completely wired up to pay more attention to painful experiences. So if you have a painful experience, your brain will instantly recall and remember that and put it in your memory. Yeah. And if you have a pleasant experience, it will take somewhere between 5 and 20 seconds for your brain to even register it's happening. And then after that, it will take at least another 12 seconds for us to relay that to memory. So our brains have a very, very strong negativity bias. Yeah, so we remember negative things instantaneously and positive things are just much harder to take in. If you notice that, if someone's ever given you any feedback from like a job or an interview or something, they'll say like 10 good things and one bad thing and you'll just remember the bad thing. Yeah, so this is what this is negativity bias. I think this is just really helpful. I found that really helpful because I was a bit like, God, why do I always remember the difficult things and not be able to dwell on the positive? Why is dwelling on the positive so different and difficult? And it's just a bit like, oh, we are just hardwired that way. That is how our brains work. So I found that quite helpful. So, you know, as part of this revolution, as well as turning towards our unpleasant experience and trying to transform and liberate ourselves of what's optional in that, we also need to turn towards the good, yeah, to let in the pleasant experiences in our lives, to dwell on the positives, to dwell on our good qualities, to let them in, to let ourselves be loved and feel loved and let in that positivity, because that's of great benefit to the world. You know, when you're acting from a place of love in yourself, or feeling loved in yourself, that is of great benefit to the world. Again, I can just talk through personal experience of that, really. When I went off on my ordination retreat, I went on a 3-month ordination retreat. And as part of that retreat, I had this conscious practice of letting myself feel loved. So whenever anyone expressed any positivity towards me, I made a practice of letting it in, of taking it on. And I did that, so I did that consistently for 3 months. And when I came home, what I noticed was I was just far less defensive and far less, so I was far less defensive, like needed to defend myself, but also I was much more easily able to rejoice in others rather than get irritated with others. Because in a way I just let, I knew that I was loved. I was more confident in myself of feeling loved. And that was so, I suppose, you know, I just know that it's of great benefit in the world. When I'm living from a place of feeling threatened, it's I'm of less benefit to the world than if I'm in a place of feeling loved and connected. So we're also going to let in the good this weekend. So one thing, I now just want to make a few closing comments about awareness before I finish. So awareness, mindfulness, is comes from the Pali word sati, and it's often, it's got a few, I'm going to give you a few definitions of that. So one from Sankaracharya in Living with Awareness, he says, sati, mindfulness, is keen attention to one's present experience. Or Vishwapani says, it's the simple activity of paying attention to what is happening in one's immediate experience and setting aside one's likes and dislikes about reality. And then another one from Maitreya Bandhu is paying attention on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally. Yeah, so that's the flavour of what we're doing, is we're trying to look at our experience, at those foundations of our experience, so our bodies, our feelings, our thoughts, and we're trying to just pay attention very simply to our experience in the present moment. Yeah. But it's important just to broaden that out a bit. So sati has a very literal translation as recollection, memory, and recalling to mind. So although in these definitions of mindfulness, we are always looking at what's happening in our present experience, it's worth remembering that that present experience includes memories of the past and thoughts of the future. So this function of awareness is an integrating function of all of our beings, which although we're paying attention to what's happening now, that is always going to include past and future. I think sometimes people can think that means they have to ignore past and future. Yeah, so it doesn't mean that. It means it includes that. And I'm just going to read you a little excerpt from the editor's preface of Living with Awareness, which is Sankaracharya's book on awareness. Just because it actually, this quite amused me, so I thought I'd share it. And the excerpt, he says, mindfulness is often interpreted rather narrowly as being simply about developing a focused attention on the experience of the present moment. Practitioners find this an attractive goal, and not always for the most positive reasons. The promise of freedom from being troubled by any considerations beyond what is happening, one happens to be doing and experiencing here and now, can seem alluring in one's weaker moments. However, Sankaracharya's approach to Buddhism centers upon the necessity of locating and integrating even the most rarefied practices within the context of the fully lived human life. Yeah, so we're going to be exploring our experiences in the moment, but yeah, that is, has an integrating function of including all of us, yeah, in this practice of becoming more human. Yeah, which includes all our past experiences, all our future experiences, all our pleasant and our unpleasant experiences. And then another really important dimension of awareness, which we really must be aware of, is sampajana, yeah, which is the awareness of our purpose. Yeah, having a clear comprehension of the direction we want to move in, and Yeah, just our intention of why we're doing what we're doing. Yeah, so awareness naturally has a very ethical dimension. Again, although it's what's happening in this present moment, what's happening in this present moment will have consequences. Yeah, so it's having this ethical awareness of, having an awareness of the ethical dimension of awareness. That's a lot of awarenesses in one sentence. Yeah, so we need to be really aware of our intentions, of why we're doing things, whether they're skillfully motivated or unskillfully motivated. Yeah, because our actions will have consequences for us and other people. Yeah, so all these things we need to bear in mind. The last thing I just wanted to finish with is just a little mention about, in a way, the other regarding dimension of self-awareness. So I've said this before, but look, I truly believe that through the transformation of ourselves, we do this for our own benefit and for the benefit of others. So when I did my first ever retreat, it happened to be in India, and I was listening to this Dharma talk. It was a taped Dharma talk, and I heard the Four Noble Truths for the first time. Yes, yeah, so the Four Noble Truths: there is suffering. Suffering is caused by craving. There is a path to the end of suffering, and it's the Noble Eightfold Path that's going to lead us on that path to freedom of suffering. Yeah. So that's the Four Noble Truths. And when I heard this teaching, I was very struck by it. Yeah, I was very struck by the fact that craving, my want for things to be the way I wanted them, caused me a lot of suffering. I knew that was true. But I was also really struck that craving caused a lot of suffering for other people. That I caused a lot of suffering for other people through my craving. And I was motivated to change and practice, not only because I wanted to be free from suffering, but because I wanted to stop creating suffering for other people. Yeah? Because I created a lot of suffering for other people through my suffering. Yeah, so I was motivated to change not only for myself, but also for the benefit of others. Yeah, and I think this is really important, because sometimes I think we have all these ideas that, you know, being self-absorbed or, you know, selfish, and we've got to think about others. But which is true, we do have to think about others, and beneficial activity for others in a very direct way is also very important. But I think we have to really remember that transforming ourselves is also for the benefit of others. They're not separate. They can't be separate. And I'm going to finish with another poem that's on that theme. And this is by Thich Nhat Hanh. You are me and I am you. Isn't it obvious that we are inter-are? You cultivate the flower in yourself, so that I will be beautiful. I transform the garbage in myself, so that you will not have to suffer. I support you. You support me. I am in this world to offer you peace. You are in this world to bring me joy.